I get flashbacks of him having conversations with Primarchs trying to order them around and them just being like, pfft.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, BLL Battle of Assaults Podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
And Adam Camilleri.
Oh, hello there.
Hello, happy holidays. Hope everyone is having a great either a beginning or a continuation or what have you to their holiday season. It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you all very much for listening to us. Hey, Spotify now has ratings for podcasts. So if you're listening to Spotify, you have not previously had an opportunity to give us a 5-star review, but we'd appreciate it very much if you did, or whatever the max rating is there. Would mean a whole lot to us.
It's your lucky day, your lucky ducks. But your lucky day. I mean, our lucky day.
Well, let me tell you why people really are lucky is that they don't have to listen to me talk about painting Death Guard Terminators anymore because I'm done.
Hey, for now.
Yeah. So what? How many is that complete? You've got like, what, 20 done?
20, so 30.
Freaking yikes, man. Well done.
Yeah. But so some of them are character models. And so it's...
they count.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a bunch of Death Shroud and then 20 Bright Lords. Or sorry, Blight Lords. And then a couple of characters.
Some useless Death Shroud and some premium Blight Lords, you mean?
That's, look, I only painted them because they were done. They were already built.
I do not agree with the TPM stance there on Death Shroud. Blight Lords are a fine Terminator. Death Shroud are good too.
Oh yeah, I think Death Shroud have their place, but I just don't think they need if you're going to go quantity, I think you want to be in the Blight Lord space right now.
Fair.
Just to eke out another body or two over the course of the game to be on the objectives. But, you know, look, what do I know? But that means in the span of just about a month and a half, I've painted about 1,600 points of Death Guard.
It's really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so people have been real supportive online, posting pictures up on Twitter and Instagram. Really appreciate that. But the project is done. It's been fun. I'm glad I did it. And really, you know, I had them all built. I was like, why not go ahead and paint them all at the same time? You know, getting that whole economy of motion thing going on with paint pots and assembly line and that kind of stuff. But I'm very happy with the outcome. And now I don't have to whine about having to paint them anymore. So this may be the last show of the year. I think when this comes out, it'll probably be on the 25th. And that means, with the way the weeks fall, that the next show might be the first show of the next year. We're not going to skip a week or anything, but it just may be really how it all shakes out as far as like release-wise. And that means we can talk about what we think our favorite model of 2021 is.
Yeah, baby. There are a lot of options. This was a pretty, despite this year being pretty maligned, like hasn't been a great one for many people out there. There's been some legit models have come out.
Yeah. And like, yeah, as far as the year goes, I think we were just talking a little bit in the pre-show about how, you know, 2019 seems like almost like yesterday. And in some cases, but yet at the same time, whichever lens you're looking through, it could be, you know, a long time. We started thinking about, you know, and the Games Workshop Warhammer community site has helped us out here, is that, can you believe that Martyrion came out in 2017 and Magnus came out in 2016?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. It was unbelievable that Magnus is 5 years old. Like, we have preschooler Magnus.
That's funny. He's about as tall as one, I think.
He is. It's up there. But yeah, because Abaddon was the Minister of the Year in 2019, which, fair enough. Incredible model. But yeah, that felt like Abaddon coming out felt like 6 months ago, you know?
Come on, man. Does not feel like Mephiston came out at the end of 2019.
Yeah, dude. We're in a time vortex, I swear. The years keep coming and stop coming. They're absolutely right.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. But I think a lot of people think the same way. But then we've had, you know, there was, seems like, had, you know, kind of supply chain issues and stuff. Who knows what the models that could have been. But we've had some real nice ones come out in 2021.
Well, the fact of the matter is, GW doesn't release bad models anymore. Like, they just don't.
Well, good point.
I joke about the last bad one there being that Eldari terrain set, which was laughably bad. It was, and it stood out as so comically bad because it was the first bad thing they put out in like a year, and it's the last bad thing they put out in like the last 4 years. That's why it stands out so much, because they just don't put out bad models. Like I said, everything's just kind of gorgeous. The only stuff they've put out that I've been like, huh? It's just questionable aesthetic choices. Like why they chose the high elves to be bovine related, you know? Why not rhinoceros or leopard?
I don't mind that.
Why? I just don't mind that.
I don't know, this bovine. I think it's more undulates, maybe.
Yeah. Still, I stood back and I looked at it. I'm like, huh, that was an interesting choice. And some of the...
A fox goat? But,
nothing wrong with the wind foxy thing, whatever that is. I don't know what that is. Sorry. The fox guy with the ribbons.
You nailed it.
But yeah, I did. They just don't make bad models. Like I remember I also heard Cursed City's coming back, which has, like, if you want to talk about a treasure trove of models, like that, oh my God, they are so pretty in there.
Yes, that is the truth. So look, yeah, that is. We saw something about that. So people want to, upset that they didn't get it or didn't want to pay an inflated price or whatever. You know, it seems like you're getting your chance.
The instantaneous scalping of that box was kind of messed up.
Well, I think that was in pockets here because I would still find them out there on the shelves every now and then
for
a long time.
But it was so limited that I know friends of mine who really, really wanted it and couldn't get it. I know friends of mine who bought it for like one or two models for a D&D campaign and they got the box and then it's just sitting on a shelf.
Yeah.
And other people who want to play the actual game and who want the whole set have gone begging. So very happy GW's rectifying that.
Those board games don't disappoint. I think that there's something, you know, we talked to this about this a bunch on the show, but you can break them out with people that don't play miniature games and they deliver a good evening of gaming experience. And you still, you get to scratch your itch if you like moving around the models, you're like, living in the lore or whatever. And some people just like to play a good game. And they don't disappoint. But model of the year. So before we get too sidetracked, Games Workshop has put out some suggestions of what they think the model of the year based on month release. And Bellicor was in April. Is there really anything that can contend with the magnitude and amazingness that is the first Demon Prince?
For the sake of a discussion, maybe, but kind of not.
Well, I mean, Sigvald, Helbrick.
Look, even my darling Chadbrecht, who I love, it's still Bellicor is so much crazier, cooler, and more amazing.
And the dragon, the Stormcast dragon coming out, I guess came out this month. That thing's magnificent.
It is crazy. I mean, if Red was here, he'd be like, everybody stop. Like, Plastic Deathcore Krieg came out this year. Everything else is irrelevant. But even he would back that up by saying, but yes, Bellicor is amazing and probably will win.
Gaunt's Ghosts aren't on this.
Ooh, that's true.
Like, yeah, this is not every release. This is, I think, just what they have is the signature centerpiece models that came out.
I think for me, Gaunt's Ghosts like ticks all of my boxes. One, Astra Militarum, obviously. But they're all characters. They are from a beloved series in the lore, and they're just absolutely gorgeous. And I believe there was also a tactical rock. There was also a tactical tree.
Tactical tree.
So it ticks all the boxes for me.
So the new Gravis captain got announced, and the first thing I looked at was whether he had a tactical rock. And lo and behold, there it is under his main foot, perfectly foot sized, perfectly Gravis foot sized rocks strewn across the galaxy. On a multitude of words,
servitors bring them.
I feel like I would like to see us move towards tactical severed orc heads.
That would be better.
Sergeant Joven has one of those, I think, doesn't he?
He does. Oh, Helbrecht's got one of the. Helbrecht got a whole torso, like torso.
Tactical torso. And alliteration bonus points.
Yeah. One thing I would really like to commend GW for is, in addition to not making bad models, the posing of their models has gotten so much better. Case in point, I think it's Mogrod, the guy, the beast boss on Squigasaur, the named one. Mm-hmm. He's on the flight at Squigasaur. The posing on that model, I'll put it up there as saying it's perfect. It's actually functionally perfect. the posing on some of the models has just gotten so incredibly perfect.
No, yeah, that pose is very evocative. Like you can see, like what yeah. is, you know, was he, is he, you know, that thing's like he's on the back of a bucking bull, but yet still maintaining his composure, ready to, like, it's still every bit of his lethality, not distressed, not.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to kill you casually.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, agreed on that. But I mean, Sigvald up there in February, that model, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, we're just going to make me some Fulgrims out of that.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm. Well, there's another returning legend of the storyline of the Old World as well.
Yeah, I liked that model when it first came out in Storm of Chaos or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was beautifully simple and it affected it was just like a perfect representation of the fluff.
Yeah, much smaller than this one.
Yeah. I actually haven't seen this one in the flesh. I haven't seen how big it is.
Well, bigger than that 25 millimeter base, that's for sure.
Really? You sure? Bold statement. Bold.
They ain't gonna make no small model now.
Nah.
So this is actually harder to pick than it, because I did it when we started talking about this topic. I thought for sure it's going to be Bellicor, but
well, I think we have to go through this with Bellicor on the side, as because for me it actually. I can make an argument for second and third place, but to me, I think Bellicor just wins for me.
Even like, what's her name? Vampire Lady with yes. her own scenery.
Yes, even her.
Okay, look, you're not wrong. I'm not really trying to do anything other than play devil's advocate. I think Bellicor is amazing, and the fact that they sculpted him to also look perfect, whether he's in Warhammer 40,000 or Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, I think. Bellicor wins, but we can have a really awesome discussion about second place and third place, I think.
Okay, fair. What do you think of second place? Well, okay, you actually, if you don't have to concede that Bellicor is first. But out of the list that are here on the Warhammer community site, what do you think is second place?
The dragon.
Yeah, dragon's pretty big. Pretty yeah. rad.
Pretty cool. The like, new dragons, the
Stormcast. Yeah, like, it's just chock full of detail and it's gorgeous, the posing, and it's massive. I mean, it's not really like a miniature. It is, I mean, technically it is, but it's like a giant model. And I think it's an amazing dragon. Yeah. Just, you know, it comes with its own hoard of gold.
We had a whole new Age of Sigmar god release though. They got the destruction god. Is it Kragnos?
Was he, are you sure he's 2020?
Yep, because he's on the list.
Sorry, 2021.
Yeah, he's coming out this year.
Time. So that model. Yeah. So the thing that throws me off about that model is his face.
That's the same, exactly the same, man. That the face just seems wrong. Just doesn't seem to. It's either it's too small or it's weirdly proportioned or he's got a really strange upper lip. But yeah, something off about that face.
Could be the way it's painted too. I mean, I've seen a lot of. I mean, look, the way I paint a face is not going to look the same way as Daniel paints a face. They could. You wouldn't even be able to. You wouldn't think they were related to each other at all. Probably.
I really enjoy painting faces. Yep.
Oh yeah, and you're good at it too. I'm just saying that if we were to paint two identical heads next to each other, I don't think people would be able to recognize them as being from the same lineage. You know.
I think that we should do this at some point.
That's not one of my strong points, face painting.
Yeah, me either. I hate it.
Good contention, though. I mean, even Morvan Vall.
Yes, Morvan's a great one. I think the model's beautifully kind of, it's almost simple in its execution. Like, it's just an awesomely detailed humanoid inside a beautiful mech suit, like ornate mech suit. It's not, it doesn't feel overdone, except for the gold bolter. Because, you know, if you can have a gold plated heavy bolter, who's going to argue? But it feels pretty good.
This is tough. This is a tough pick.
There's one more I wanted to look at. So there's the new Keepers of Secrets that came out, the two named one, Sarnisa and Dexesa, mm-hmm. The ones with the huge like peacock fan behind them.
They
are some phenomenal miniatures. And the only reason I'm not rating them up there as much is just same as Sigvald. I haven't seen them in the flesh. Are they as magnificent in the flesh as they are in person? Because
they are. Some people are using them as keepers in Warhammer 40,000 at some of the US Open events, and they are pretty cool.
I'd say they're just like truly beautiful sculpts.
Yeah.
A big fan of the skins, the skin tones they've done on them. The non-pink and purple skin tones. It's more like a pale blue. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, the way they could. Yes. No arguments here. Yeah. I don't know they're going to rate up on my number ones, though. Or, sorry, my number twos.
That's fair.
I guess I got to pick one.
Also, Fatboy came out. Glutoys. Glutos?
Which one's that?
Is the big fat guy and his palanquin being hauled by...
That them. Came out in 2021.
Oh, did it? I'm trying to check because I saw it then. I'm like, oh, was that this year? Yeah, it did. It did come out this year.
Yep, it did.
So you can get to where we're looking at some of the list is you can... If you go to the article, you can click through to vote now, and that gives you a list of the full line of models that came out, every model that came out. Gaunt's Ghost is on the list.
Yeah.
So you can vote for them there. Red, you can only vote once. this is tough.
It was a good year for models. It was a really good year for models. Wow.
I forgot Euro Ventress came out.
Yeah. I mean, the new Lilith came out as well. See, that's right.
I went to a combat patrol tournament where I painted someone's Euro Ventress.
Nice.
That was in 2021. That was this year.
That happened this year. You are correct.
You guys got to do stuff this year?
It's all coming back to me.
I'm surprised too.
I actually think that the Blade Champion, the Custodes Blade Champion, is a pretty amazing model. The detail mm-hmm. is so crisp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, like the older Custodes sculpts, they had amazing detail, but not like this.
Yeah, it's like good. Them. I like the variant and the pose too. So
yeah,
I'm gonna throw out an honorable mention to one of the greatest kits of the early 2000s, or it might have even been the late 90s. Nah, surely not. Blood Knights. When did the original Blood Knights come out? The metal ones. They were the most expensive thing in the world. Oh, it's
early 2000s. Yeah, $90.
Yeah, dude, for like three metal horsemen.
You got five. You got five.
You just get five? Okay,
but cool. That was still. A crazy price at the time.
Yeah, I must be thinking there must have been a command box you could get with the yeah. But the new Blood Knights, mwah, chef's kiss, magnificent.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen people paint them on Twitter and stuff too. They look absolutely
only crazy. $10 more than the old ones. so good.
That is funny. Well, look, there's lots of things to choose from. It's kind of fun to look at these, and I know people. I think there's absolutely no shame in voting for whatever it is your fan favorite model is.
Mm.
That's one of the cool things. Is it doesn't like Castellan Crow, also a cool looking model.
Oh, amazing! Yeah,
but you can just vote for whatever you want. You don't have to put any. You don't have to look at just the aesthetics or just how cool the model is. For maybe other people think it's cool. You can think it's cool for whatever reason. You can vote for the Primaris Storm Speeder if you'd like.
If you really want to, or the just evergreen heavy Intercessor, because you know it's just doing so much for so many right now. The little engine that could.
Hey, they're pretty tough.
They are pretty tough.
I wish people want to downvote this Qatari Marshall.
Yeah,
I'm not voting for. I'm voting against.
Gold.
I was kidding. Don't do that. Although he was a pretty strong 65 point choice.
Yes. What was the other? So there was a whole range of like a brand new line of orcs came out. The swampy
cruel boys.
Yucky orcs.
Yeah,
the cruel boys. Yeah, that's it. Man, I got some good kits out of that line.
They
Holy
did.
Crap!
They aesthetically didn't jump out at me though. Like I didn't feel compelled to go and learn more about that. I like the cartoony type orc.
Fair. I do want to point out there's an orc. Riding a freaking Skeksis though.
Sure.
A Skeksis from Dark
Crystal. No, it's cool.
It's cool.
It is cool. It is a masterpiece as far as like craftsmanship goes. But I couldn't get into that army.
That's fair. It's not for everybody. I like it.
I'm more on the Lumineth and the Sylvaneth and the.
You like your pretty boys, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, leave it to a Blood Angels player to want to play like pretty elves.
You're telling Tanya. We're like pretty round here. We're like our grim, nice duck.
I like my dirty orcs. Thank you very much.
I like my guardsmen dirty too.
Nah, mine are like pristinely clean.
Boo.
No bayonets left though. Those have all broken off a long time ago.
That is a casualty of the first secondary battle.
Yeah. So I made a whole company. Well, I don't know. Whatever 100 guys is. Platoon? I don't know. I made a whole 100 dudes with 50 of them kneeling, 50 of them standing, and all had bayonets. And I think two of them still have bayonets.
Very English army style. Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, kind of. I just wanted a bunch of guys that would rank up good, and it just felt like the right thing to do. The problem is...
It's in your blood.
Yeah. The G-dub, because my best case, I've got a bunch of different army cases and whatnots, but my best one is still the G-dub one. I still get the most in it, the big G-dub one.
Okay.
But that thing is a brutalizer of bayonets.
Oh.
Just, oh my lord. I'm constantly, yeah. I think I delve into the deeper reaches of that case. And I'll find a horde of bayonets rattling around in the bottom.
The catechin,
it's stuck in the foam.
I don't think the catechin kit came with as many bayonets as the other kits. Or mine have broken off so long ago that I no longer have any recollection of them.
Yeah. Man, along with the whole new line of the grotty orcs, we got the beast orcs, the beast hide orcs as well. The beast nagger ones.
Yeah, I like those.
We got the kill rig, we got the squig hog boys. Yeah, we got lots of new goodness out of that.
The kill rig is almost offensive.
In how good it is, yes.
Well, I mean, just the fact that it's got a lot going on. It's overwhelming.
It's so there was a unit that used to stand out, all right? Back in the old day, all through 6th edition, through 7th edition, through 8th edition, there was one unit that used to stand out because it was one of the only things that did everything well. And that was the Flying Hive Tyrant. It was fast. It was dangerous. It could shoot if you wanted it to shoot. It could fight if you wanted to a fight. It could do both a lot of the time. It was psychic as well. And then, of course, there was the Dreadknight, who did almost the same thing because it had shunt and gate. It was a psychic. It could shoot. It could fight. It could move.
Yep.
And now we have the kill rig in that conversation as well, because for some reason it's a psyker. For some reason, it's got an auto. It's got auto-hooting las cannon shots, in addition to having a super mortar for no line of sight shooting, and it's actually really good in combat.
And it slaps. Yeah,
and it slaps, and it's got a transport capacity, so it's actually one up on the rest. You know, yeah.
You do kind of pay for it, and it's got the unwieldiness of it being having that kind of big profile.
Oh, it's got a huge freaking base on it. Like, I remember the game that you and Nick called at G-Dub, the G-Dub Finals, there was a exhibition game between Mike Brandt and Nick Nanavati before.
Yep.
And Nick was able to really, really corral the kill rigs out of the middle of the table where all the objectives, where the game was going to be fought and won, just because they had those giant bases. And so that really is a thing for them.
Yeah, it is. I think that matters, and I can't say that went into the balance of the unit itself, but it certainly is a bit of a balancing factor with all the other advantages that it has.
Well, it's the same size base as a knight, I believe, except none of the advantages of being titanic. Don't move over models. Don't move through anything. Can't fall back over them. So yeah, it is. It's certainly certainly something to take consideration when you're playing with them or against them.
Yeah, and we're talking about best models. We haven't even really talked about Necromunda and the Warhammer Underworlds. Like, those are some of the most gorgeous models in the entire Games Workshop range.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to choose. Vote with your heart, people.
Is it weird that I'm trying to think of what Forge Worlds brought out this year? Because
They put out a character model or two, didn't they?
Has it been a really quiet year for Forge World? Like, it's been a ridiculously quiet year?
I think so. Like, I don't think we've seen maybe as much from Forge World as we maybe have in previous years. But I believe they have a couple of character models. I know they previewed the character models, but I don't think they've been released yet. But I mean, in addition to that, there's been a couple of character models.
They previewed the Khan, which was cool. The last of the Primax to be released, although it hasn't been formally released yet, so I suppose this doesn't count.
Yeah.
Did the Lion come out this year? Or was it last year?
I mean, I think that we haven't seen much from Forge World. We have. We have seen a little bit, but like, they're coming out with Horus Heresy stuff next year, right?
Yeah, I hear whispers and rumors about so much Horus Heresy stuff. which I want to believe is true.
We've seen those two. All we know is those two characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, they look good. I mean, the Hearthscrawl, is that what it is?
Rand, yeah. Yeah. And
I hate to say it, he looks better than the Blood Angel model.
I agree. The Blood Angels model looks better with a helmet. And for me, I can't love it because of how stupid the Tactical Rock is. Just enough. Stop making a rock. Make it anything else.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the new releases, and Sons of Horus Legion Cataphracti Praetor is up there.
Oh, yes. It's gorgeous.
So nice.
Really, really nice. I love the OG back banner as well. Nice OG back banner every now and then. Mwah, love it.
Yeah. I do want to say, I do feel like Forge World in the past, the paint jobs haven't been as good. And I don't know if, or I shouldn't say as good, but they haven't been as detailed in the paint job in the past. But the paint that they've been putting out on the stuff like that they've been putting out recently is a lot better quality. And I actually think it does show off the models a lot nicer. Mm. And this model in particular, like that banner and then like the leather of his tabard, like the work on this is impeccable.
Yeah, agreed.
I want to say Maglahurst came out this year, too.
You're absolutely correct.
Thinking about Sons of Horus. I converted my... I kitbashed my own Maglahurst. It does not look anywhere near as good as this one.
A lot of it did. He was one of those evocative original...
I love the character in the books.
Characters. It's an amazing character. I get flashbacks of him having conversations with Primarchs trying to order them around, and them just being like... No.
So, and he had decent rules in the Heresy as well. So,
nice.
Yeah, I figured I would get to, put him on the table. But now, you know, got a chance to break him out. Going to reignite that with the Luna Wolves. I actually have been wanting to put a little more effort into my Counts as Space Marine chapter. I don't want to take us off on a tangent, but when I saw that new Space Marine captain come out, I'm like, ooh, he'll look good in Luna Wolf colors.
Well, it will. I just wonder if the eye in the banner is sketched or not, if it's raised.
For which one?
Oh, for the Terminator Praetor.
Oh, I don't know about that banner. I was thinking about Maglahurst. Like, that's just a full on eye by itself. That looks handy.
Yeah, it's just a legit eye.
Oh, no. It is sculpted into it.
Yeah, the Maglahurst one is.
No, the Cataphracti. So it's a Horus Legion, or Legion Cataphracti Praetor has his back banner has that is not hand painted. Well, I mean, it is hand painted, but it is also sculpted into the banner.
Yeah, that's I see it. That's pretty.
I did a freehand for the first time ever, and it turned out awesome.
Did you use like a template little, for it or something, or just
no? It's just like the tiniest little freehand, but like in the eye of one of my squigs, the one on my war boss, I put a little crosshair in his eyeball, and I was so proud of myself. This is the first time I ever freehanded anything.
All right. Was it like a secret or a trick?
Is there a secret? I think that the secret is sort of doing the first pass in really watered down paint just to sort of get the idea of the shape that you want. And then you can clean that up really easily with like the background color again. And then once you have like the outline of what you want done, then you can go in and like, you know, intensify the color of whatever you're doing. But at least that's how I did it. And it ended up great. I painted a circle freehand. I was so proud of myself.
Well done.
That's an accomplishment. I mean, no lie.
Just like check that off the old bucket list. Do a freehand.
There we go. Well, then let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about the new Tau stuff. And kind of ramble on about that as well. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everyone, we are back. Please check out our sponsors. Yep. So the Tau coming in like really aggressive with all these leaks and spoilers.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of everything we've seen so far. It seems quite everything seems quite reasonable. It's been a big curiosity of mine how the design team go about making Tau function or relevant in 9th edition. There are so many facets of the game that they just struggle with at the moment because, well, it's a game that demands you get close, you get up and dirty with each other because everything's fought over in the middle of the table. And that is the opposite of what you want to do.
Boards are shorter too. I mean, really, I know we talked about this in the past, but like what it has, it's subtracted a turn. Like, you know, a lot of armies could pad in, oh, I'm a turn and a half or two turns away from being in range, but now, nope, you're one turn escalated.
In addition to that, where the density of terrain has become such because the game is so killy now, the game is so explosive and violent, especially as soon as the advent of AdMech came in, everyone needed to add so much more terrain to their boards because they, you know, represented a new level of range.
Need to move this fight to the city.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's another reason that's been really punitive towards Tau, because it really hampers some of their slower, more DACA intensive units like broadsides can just be deployed and not get to shoot with their main armaments for like multiple turns of the game. And that's awful on a, you know, hundreds and hundreds of points on a unit. So the main rule that they came up with, especially the biggest issue they faced out was there's a lot of Overwatch ignoring mechanics, and because of the density of terrain, there's a lot of ways to avoid the Overwatch, was the big reason that you could be like, oh, I'm a big scary Tau castle, don't come over here. But there's just people have got so much agency to avoid all that deterrent. And so they needed a reason that they can actually fight their way out of paper bag. I still think I'd be fine with Tau having like one dedicated close combat unit, like a battle suit with a katana or something.
Like why don't they put blenders on the end of one of these fists?
Yeah, exactly. Why don't just stick some knives on them, make them spin? It'll do fine.
Narratively, I think that does, it kind of gives them... you know, they're a young race.
Yeah.
And so they have not figured that part out. I watched this whole YouTube video recently on how interstellar combat, or no, not interstellar combat, how interstellar relations would probably work between societies.
That's cool.
Yeah, I would butcher all the scientific parts, so I'm not going to bother. But it's actually kind of realistic that even though the Tau, you know, are new, functionally it probably takes some time for them to figure out what their place in the universe is, and I'm willing to bet evolution 2.0 of Warhammer 50,000, there's going to be some blenders and fists on these suits.
Well, so one of the things that I always kind of accepted, although I've never really read this anywhere, I always kind of accepted that Tau was phenomenally technologically advanced but not society, not socially advanced. Like, they still have a caste system despite being massively progressive technologically. And I thought it was a cool dichotomy for them to work into the race, that they're like, they're still back in the Stone Age as far as like how their society is structured, but they're being pushed forward by this super rapid advancement. And so maybe they just skipped the bit where everyone was killing each other with sticks, you know, and went straight to the bit where
they got the bonding knives or whatever.
Yeah, see, they're for like fun. Knives are for fun in Tau culture. sticking with the sharp end things, just, you know, well, what do you mean? But back to what makes them cool now. So battlesuits is like, to me, battlesuits is the iconic Tau unit. Some people say it's Fisher Fury, some people say it's like Riptides. No, it's the simple, straight up Crisis battlesuit. That is the icon of the range, as far as I'm concerned.
Always been on the cover,
Yeah, exactly right. So battlesuit models can now make ranged attacks with weapons, even though the units are within engagement range of enemy units, but they can only make ranged attacks against the units they are in engagement range of. In such circumstances, these models can target an enemy unit, even if other friendly units are within engagement range of the same enemy. So some, you know, it's a bigger squad or whatnot. It's a crazy good rule and something to make battlesuits really stand out and feel important again. Like, you will want like the core of your army to be, you know, a decent sized unit of battlesuits, because it is that now it works with that pseudo deterrent. You can't just tap it, it'll shoot you to bits. I mean, there is still some agency if you want to tap it. If you, you know, tap it with something, you can force it to shoot in certain areas.
Yeah, force it. Yeah, you're sacrificing something at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe, if you can't take it out.
Yeah, but the fact is they won't be stuck there forever, which was the issue that they had before.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my fun is over.
Yeah, exactly right.
One gaunt in contact.
But yeah, then they've had some upgrades to some of their basic weapon system, like a burst cannon's now 6 shots. It's strength 5 like it always was. Their flamers have an extra 2, their D6 plus 2, so they're min 3, max 8, which I think is quite nice. It makes the Overwatch of those weapons in particular really quite scary, especially shooting into combat. The multi-tracker and the target lock both got a little bit updated as well. The multi-tracker being this model has exploding sixes for one additional hit, but only when you're targeting a unit with six or more models in it. And then the target lock is ignore the benefits of light cover. I think these all look good, reasonable, even, you know, but not on the crazy side. They're not on the OP side. Like, I was fearful maybe something like a burst cannon might get a rend, like might be end up being like six shots at strength five minus one damage. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, you can put three of those on a battle suit, you know, 18 shots per battle suit. Like that's enough. Add some rerolls to wound in there. That's enough to kill vehicles, you know, on a decent sized squad.
Yeah, I think this with the ability, if they can stand up in combat, if they punish the opponent enough as they're coming across with some good deployment, can still play the game and then still interact.
Mm. Yeah, exactly right.
And you're not just putting models back in the box for the rest of the three turns or whatever.
Yeah, and look, some people did make Tau work. Like they can make they like a competitive Tau army isn't a top table army. It doesn't play in enough phases. Even in the shooting phase, it's not as scary as some other shooting armies out there. They only play, they only deal damage in that phase. So you want that phase should be the scariest one in the game, so to speak. But it hasn't. Like AdMech actually put them to shame in a lot of intended purpose. Some Space Marine armies are up there as well.
Yeah, we hope they have that dialed up. Dial it up to 11.
Well, I want them to have a more dynamic shooting movement phase. Because if you're only playing in two phases, like you're only playing a shooting phase and a movement phase, cool, your shooting phase can be as amazing as you want, as it can be. But unless your whole army's like, doesn't need line of sight to shoot, which I'm hoping is not a thing either, you're always going to have some issues because you can't only rely on one phase to win you the game, which is why I want them to have a really exciting movement phase as well. And they've got a stratagem back.
You almost strike and fade?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Do you remember the days, yeah? Like a jetpack unit or a
jump, shoot, jump.
We'll just have jump, shoot, jump. And I thought they might give it back to things like, I always thought like things like stealth teams and ghost keels might want to have it innately because it makes a lot of sense for them. But this one reads as it's a 1 CP/2 CP strat. It's called strike and fade. So it's fire and fade. Use a stratagem to start a shooting phase.
Yeah, they're not striking. They are zapping, yeah. Zap and fade.
One Tau Empire jetpack unit from your army. You can shoot with that unit, and then it can make a normal move for up to 6 inches. Cannot shoot again. If it's five or fewer models, it's 1 CP. If it's anything other, it's 2 CP. What's really cool there is the jetpack keyword. Even in Index, the 40K at the start of 8th edition, they had that jetpack keyword and it didn't mean anything. And so I'm happy they're starting to use that keyword and make it have some relevance.
At first when I read this, it's like, normal move up to 6 inches, is that far enough? But you get to pre-measure all that stuff. Like you just got to get just within range of your weapons. It's not, you get to move, you don't have to be moving towards, you can be moving away and then move away again.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And then they've got the other stratagem they've shown us is drop threat acquisition. I love this one. This is your beefy, throw the kitchen sink at it. This needs to die this turn. Use stratagem in your movement phase when a battle suit unit from your army is set up on the battlefield using the Manta Strike ability or the homing beacon action, which we don't quite know what that one is yet. Until the end of your turn, each time a battle suit model in a unit makes a range attack, you can re-roll the hit roll. If it contains four or more battle suit models, it costs 3 CP. Otherwise, it is 2 CP. So just full re-rolls to hit, just for what as many CP as required. Really good strat.
I like that. So Mana Strike, we can assume probably a stratagem.
Yeah, either that or it'll be the pseudo deep strike that all battle suits come with. Like it has been in the past. Either that'll be like the, you know, pay amount of CP and put in reserve thing.
Until the end of the turn, each time a battle suit model in that unit makes a range deck, you can re-roll the hit roll. The unit scores, or unit contains four or more battle suit models. Stratagem is 3 CP other than 2 CP. This could be 5 CP and it's still being used.
You're still gonna find games where you need it. So yeah, everything so far for Tau looks pretty good, pretty reasonable. I think, but yeah, I do want to see a super good movement phase because I think they need that to go in tandem to make the shooting phase relevant in some games.
Well, the move characteristic on the things is going to be relevant.
Exactly right. It is interesting that they said the strike and fade, you can only move up to 6 inches. So you got to assume that battle switch only moves 6 inches. I was hoping they'd move eight.
I don't know. It says move up to 6 inches. So, you know, maybe yes, that is the limiter, is that it's they can move. Maybe they move more than that normally.
Yeah, maybe they do.
Maybe they don't move more than that normally.
But yeah, lots to be excited about Tau. if they're good, I'm sorry, I just don't want them to be crazy good. Like, I don't want them to be the best army in the game. No offense to Tau players. I'm sure you guys feel like you need your time in the sun.
I'm sure they think it's their time again. And, like, don't forget, there are some players that have probably gotten into Tau recently that were not around during the Tau'dar phase.
Yeah, so it's... When was the last time Tau was top table? Was, like, proper top table? Was it
Riptide Wing? Edition.
Seventh edition. Seventh edition had Riptide Wing, though, and that was top table.
Stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was probably the last time. So that's an easy 4 or 5 years, man. So maybe, like, I mean, the only reason I don't want Tau to be super, super, super good is that all my memories of when Tau is good, the game isn't that fun, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, I said the opposite about Orcs, and I was so wrong about Orcs. I said, when Orcs are the best army in the game, the game's a good time, you know? Everyone's having fun. The Orc players are like, you're going to pick up some models, I'm going to pick up some models, my army's, you know, we're all having a good time, so I'm going to yell, wah, you're going to be happy about it.
You pick up your models, and I move my models, and then you pick up your models, and then shoot models.
And then the freebooter list came out, and I'm like, no, Adam, don't make Adam a liar.
Maybe you're just jinxing it.
Careful what you wish for.
Exactly right.
But there's so we know there's going to be synergies between units and people buffing. We saw some other commander abilities and that kind of stuff in previous articles. We know that marker lights are going to do something.
Yeah, I'd love a marker light rework so that they're a little bit more interactive, because it was just such a yes or no question. Did you make it to the 4 or 5 marker lights enough to be relevant or no? Well, cool. One was all you needed anyway then. And I want them to be more granularly good.
I do remember those time periods where I'm just like trying everything I possibly can to keep them off that certain marker light threshold.
Yes, you would. You'd like fire and fade mid marker light hunt. I used to love doing that when I messed around with some Harlequins here and there in some practice games. And I remember a game where someone got me up to 3 marker lights, and I knew if they got me to 5, I was absolutely dead. So I fire and faded halfway through, so I knew I had to keep trying, and it worked. They committed the rest of their marker lights and did get me to 5. It was great.
There you go. Yeah, it was, but it's like a game within a game, and I bet that's still going to exist. But I think that the way that, like, the terrain rules work and, you know, this secondaries and stuff work, then it might not be as punishing as...
One of the mechanics I'm really interested to hear what they're doing. Yeah, marker lights is definitely one of those, and great pick. The other one I really want to keen to see is how they do drones. So drones was a real feel bad mechanic for
like the way they deploy off, or how they interact, or
how they interact
wounds off.
So the bad bit of the interaction. So for those of you who may have forgotten, so you'd roll to hit and to wound against one target, and then all the agency would be in the Tau player's hands to say whether or not they take the save on the model or they try and divvy it off to a drone on a 2+. And then the remaining of that would go against the drone. What sucked was that I would hit and wound against either a ghost keel that was negatives to hit and decent toughness, or against a riptide that was toughness 7. You would hit and wound against the toughness 7 model, and then that wound that had to go through that intense toughness would then be divvied off. It always felt that it was bad. Like, I should hit the model, and then you decide whether it's going to be the drone or not. Yeah. Have I hit the thing, the protective drone, or have I hit the actual chassis in the model? It always felt stupid that I had to roll against the toughness of the thing to see if I've hurt you, and then the Tau player had the agency.
Another game within a game is like, okay, which faction do these drones belong to? Because I'm not shooting at that one, because I only got 2 drones left. That one's got 4 drones left.
That's right, man. Yeah, when you had mixed squads, mixed armies, you know, Volar or Borkan in with your Tau Sept or your Farsight and stuff. That was always interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it was very powerful and kind of frustrating, but at the same time, they were only communicating and playing in 2 phases.
Correct.
So you got to make those as exciting as you possibly can for them, for that player.
Yeah, I mean, even Tau players for a lot of 7th edition, Tau was quite strong in 8th edition as well, guys. Not going to lie, Tau was very close, very top table for and very relevant for quite a bit. They were never the best army in the game, from what I could from my opinion. But they were definitely up there, and people would take like just drones for days. it was quite obnoxious.
But I think there was a ratio, and like some of the better Tau players figured out exactly what that ratio was, and did not dilute their pew pews for the defensiveness.
Exactly right. Yeah, there a lot of people figured out the exact ratios you needed. Some people had a mix of gun drones, marker drones, and shield drones in the same squad.
Yeah, I would sally up to a table, and I would basically be able to almost like eyeball the caliber of the Tau player based on their drone to suit ratio.
That's fair. That's pretty good. It was interesting to me how so I don't know if people track these things or pay much attention, but how the I guess the flagship paint schemes change for some armies. Do you remember? So forever it was the Tau Ochre, the Tau Sept, you know, yellowish brown
with the digital camo,
and now it's changed to the thing is the Volar scheme, which is the kind of off white with the red.
You sure that's the flagship?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it is now. It's on all the art.
Oh yeah, that's on the art. There you go. Yeah,
it was on the front cover of the last Codex as well. I remember that was when I think the change happened. It's interesting. It's an interesting thing to track from GW. I do think the Tau Sept color scheme is not great. Put it out there.
I think they look pretty cool. I also like these suits. Like I'm not a Tau player. I'm full on. I've played some Tau in the past. I did heavily consider Riptide Wing back in the day.
Yeah, no surprise.
Because they look cool, and they were powerful, and you could travel. They're travel friendly. Like, oh, I need you know, I mean, if you don't count the drones, which fit, you know, in your hand, you could carry them on a plane in a couple of handfuls. But you only needed 7 models or whatever.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good
travel armor.
I mean, so, just in closing on the Tau Sept scheme, it's solid, but it doesn't give you much scope for, I don't know, showing things off. I feel like the red shows off the models a little better.
I think that the problem is not in the color scheme that they've chosen. I think it's in how they've chosen to stage it, if that makes sense, right? Like, there's one photo on Warhammer Community right now where it's just a bunch of white models, but then the terrain that they're in is also white. I think if you had that on a contrasting color terrain, it would look amazing. Like, I think if you had this on a Mars world with red sand and stuff, I think it would look absolutely incredible. But that's why you always say faces and bases, right?
Makes sense.
So the other big change, I guess, from the flagship color scheme was in the Necron one. They went from the Cesaric to... No, they went to the Cesaric from Sortek. Yeah, from the Sortek color scheme. The old green on green goodness.
I'm going to take your word for it because I do not know the color schemes of those dynasties.
Well, the Sortek one's the OG silver and, you know, silver and green.
Yeah, with a glowing green goss.
Yeah, and we think you buy darkness or Cadillac greens and stuff. And then they went to the Caesarican dynasty when the Silent King came back, because that's his dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's going to be, you know, it's his race. He made him.
Oh, yeah. You're
going to wear my colors, boys.
You're definitely going to gonna put my name on the sign out there. So.
You're my side of it.
No, fair enough. That's an interesting thing to track over the, like when the Ultramarines became the poster boys.
Yeah, exactly. Because it used to be Blood Angels. Like, originally it was Blood Angels, wasn't it? They were the poster boys.
I don't know if there was an official... a Black Templar were definitely on the third edition box.
Mm, exactly. Well, I figure if you're on the box and you're on the Codex, you're the poster boys.
Oh, then Blood Angels were on the second edition box.
That's the poster boy for the edition. Whoever's on the front of the box and the front of their Codex.
Yeah. Well, then from fourth edition on, so I think it's been Ultramarines.
It's been Ultras. Yeah. Black Crag. Yeah. All that goodness.
Blue looks pretty good though. I can't argue with that.
I wonder when they're finally going to let Cadia go. I did joke that I want to see him do a new Imperial Guard line. That
I'm pretty sure Cadia is gone.
Only physically.
Still in our hearts.
I would love to see them do like a generic PDF, a generic PDF line
of what?
Of Guard.
God,
Planetary Defense Force.
Oh, I thought you meant like an Acrobat file of what? What on earth are you talking about?
I'm crazy, everybody.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, sorry about that. Looping us back to Tau, though, I do hope that the army has some tricks they can pull in the movement phase and to get around some of the terrain. But like we know, especially if people are adapting the US Open kind of style of terrain or been putting in bigger line of sight blocking pieces of terrain to like confront the Admic menace or whatever in their personal games, that could impact lots of armies like Guard and, you know, Tau function without some movement shenanigans and just without overwhelming firepower. They function very similar to Guard, you know, in regards they could both be penalized by line of sight and they both rely on shooting.
Yeah, exactly right. And they both can't fight their way out of a wet paper bag at the moment. Yeah. And absolutely true. There's a lot of parallels between why those two armies struggle. They're kind of for the same, very much the same reasons. And it's a little bit sad about, but it's just the way Ninth Edition is played. Like it's a very dynamic game that requires speed pretty much more than anything. Mm-hmm. Speed, if you've got speed, the rest of it is just will be good enough because you can then apply the pressure where you want it. So you only need to be if you got crazy
or score speed, points. You could be scoring points.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. You really need to be moderately killy if you've got speed.
Yeah.
You really need to be, you know, moderately dangerous or imposing if you've got speed. It's good. And unfortunately, that's not something Guard has. They do have some in the fact that they can, you know, move, etc. But you're not doing it with anything that can kill. All you can do with those movement moves and the dumb moves is disrupt. That's the best you can do.
That, you know, we talked about Tau have not developed, you know, power blades, you know, or, I mean, outside of one or two or fit power fist or whatever. And Guard, you can put him everywhere and just no one cares.
No one cares. It's pretty funny.
You can load up. I mean, how many power fists can you put in a Guard army? Oh, a ton.
An ungodly amount.
And power swords.
How many will be relevant?
They still wouldn't do anything.
One of my favorite models of all time, guys, one of my absolute favorite models, is the Commissar yelling at his men with his book, with his power fist in the air.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why?
A sweet model.
It's a beautiful model, except Tactical Rock exists. In that.
I don't see what Joe's beef is with the scenery.
It goes that deep as a conspiracy.
I just don't mind it.
I don't mind it at all. Individually, on a model-by-model basis, if I was just to pick up a model, I wouldn't care that it's got a Tactical Rock. But when I see every single release for all 2 years, every single one has a Tactical freaking rock.
I love that you're so salty about this.
It's time to just be like,
it's living rent free in your brain.
Do better than this, people. We can aspire to more.
I'm starting to come around. Maybe I'll join you in this. Start a petition or something.
We'll have a rotation. Every second rock is a skull.
What about like a tactical ammo case? Right?
Yes.
Man, exactly. How about something like, yo, anything you put on that miniature is something else I have to paint. Let's just go without it.
Oh, heaven forbid we have some like sloping ground. Ooh, feisty. Jeez, let's get real, real spicy.
No, see, the gamer inside of me is like, then you start worrying about line of sight things.
That's fair.
Oh my goodness.
You mean in the 41st millennium, not all battlefields are perfectly flat? Stupid.
Oh my goodness. Well, I know we've rambled on quite proficiently, like it's our job in this episode.
Well, so I guess in closing, I get to make my final point. The Tactical Rock is the model of the year. Mic drop. Bang. That's it. We're out.
Certainly the most prolific, you know, if that's the right word.
It turns out all the best model, every incredible model that's come out from GW this year, the Rock's there, you know.
Oh, it's the new plasma pistol.
It is. It's the new plasma pistol, baby.
Didn't even Kragnos have a tactical rock?
Yes, he did.
He brought a tactical mountain.
Yeah, he did it.
That's where I think one of the reason Kragnos is not higher on the list is his face. You know, we talked about the face a little bit. He's
like posturing. He's faking himself.
Yeah, he's faking his tallness.
He is. Yeah. He's overcompensating. He wishes he had. He wishes he walked on two legs. That's what he's doing right there.
He's pretending hard enough. Mountain goats are. Have you seen them like perched up on basically nothing?
Dude, it's messed up. I have no idea how that's a thing.
They just laugh at gravity.
Yeah, what a weird evolutionary thing.
You know some incredible models that came out this year? Sorry.
I thought you were going to talk about goats.
The Sons of Behemoth, the new giants, came out this year, I think.
Were those? No, wait.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did.
Those are good. Let me tell you, seeing the Sigmar tournaments, some absolute spectacular examples of those models.
Do you remember? So at the GW Open, the GW Finals, when we had the little meme games, whose code will reign supreme, the AOS versus 40K games.
Yeah, it was funny. Completely unofficial, but funny.
Yeah, totally unofficial, but fun. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, if I had my raggedy guardsman out here playing against your, gorgeous Moor Tribe or Gloomspite, whatever it is, models, Ardeneth, Lumineth, whatever, I'd be like,
my models are like 9 factions.
Like, my army is beautifully painted and I love it and it's converted and it would look like garbage compared to these new Age of Sigmar models.
My Age of Sigmar army is painted way nicer than my 40K army.
I think it's a thing, though. If you've got beautiful miniatures, you want to go the extra mile.
Yeah.
If the miniatures inspire you, you want to paint them as good as they deserve to be painted, you feel.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about it in our list of models that were going on. All the Soulblight Gravelords came out this year.
Yeah.
And yeah, man. There's not a bad one in that bunch.
It's true. But yeah, that was the thing. I looked over at the 40K tables versus the AOS games. I'm like, oh my lord, those AOS armies look absolutely stunning. And the 40K armies actually look quite ordinary compared on the same table.
That's it, 40K players. We got to step our game up. The next time we do a Warhammer 40,000 versus Age of Sigmar skirmish, kind of look like we came on the same bus.
That's right.
I'm going to come in on the AOS bus, though, because my army's painted really nice. So I'm going to bring that.
It's a wonderful time to be in the hobby. So there's that. Let's see. Next episode, we'll probably be the first episode of the new year, although we'll be recording it before the end of the year.
Nice.
So we're going to be in two time zones like you used to be, Adam.
We're still in two time zones.
Two different days, two realities.
Yeah, not in different hemispheres anymore, which is disappointing. I have to get myself down the Caribbean.
Seriously, if y'all made it this far in the show, thanks a lot for listening to us ramble. This has been a heck of a year. I think we've all made some good hobby progress, done some cool things, got plenty of more cool things coming. It's going to be a bright next year. We're around. Hit us up on the social media, either Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or whatever. If you got anything going on, share your hobby progress with us. Tag us and stuff. That means a lot. Again, I love seeing that. It's all my Instagram and Twitter are just all hobby people. So if you're looking for cool people to follow, you can check out and see who I follow. And they're more than likely miniature painters or builders or whatever.
I also love that your branding is so consistent across all platforms.
I sense sarcasm.
It's amazing.
It is super sarcastic.
So on Twitter, I'm Warmaster_TPM. But then when I Instagram, I'm like, man, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Fights with Dice is a cool name. And I wonder if it's available. And turns out it was available. So I had to take it. Because it's got that double meaning. Because we do little battles with dice. And yet I battle with the dice when I feel like I'm not rolling hot.
You ever roll hot? I never roll hot.
What's that like?
Yeah, what does that feel like?
Sometimes. I got to feel it. Like that we talked about, Red and I got to play a game this year, and I did. I rolled exceptionally hot. That's what actually kept me in the game, because he was punishing me with those mana cores. I'm like, well, I guess I'm just going to make a bunch of 5+.
Nice.
Yeah, or 4+, in the case maybe with the Infernal Mercedes. But that was good. But yeah, occasionally. Not too bad, but I thought that would be such a cool thing. Whatever, my picture's in there. Just look for me.
I, however, have consistent branding across all platforms. So if you just search War Mistress, everything comes up.
Link me so people can find me over there. Just to find her. And then
I'll
put you in my link tree.
There you go.
I do everything all the time. If you want to find me, I don't know, throw a handful of rocks, you'll probably hit me somewhere.
You're going to get it. Right, well, seriously, I hope everyone is having a safe and wonderful time. Thanks for listening. Please leave us some 5-star reviews. Maybe not on the back of this show, but, on the rest of our body of work. And we're going to keep it coming. And I hope to hear from you all in the next year. We'll see you.
See you then.
Bye, everybody.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.